Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. So, as you know, I am an amateur science nerd bordering on dork. I love all things ancient history. I love all things simulation theory and multiverse. And I follow a doctor named Dr. Paul Halpern, professor of physics at St. Joseph University, the author of The Allure of the Multiverse, Extra Dimensions, Other Worlds, and Parallel Universes. He's been with us before, and he joins us again now. Doc, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming back to the show.
Hi, Dave. Great to see you.
So let's start out, as we do each time, but because it's such an interesting and complicated thing, let's start out at the very 101 beginning and talk about what the multiverse theory is, and we'll go from there.
Well, as I explain in my book, The Allure of the Multiverse, there are two different really multiverse theories. One is the cultural multiverse, which is what we imagine parallel universes to be like. And that's been part of literature, movies, science fiction, all sorts of stuff for years. And then there's the scientific multiverse, which is a little bit different because the scientific multiverse applies only to very small and very large things on the quantum level, meaning subatomic level, and also on the universal level.
Yeah, the cultural, everyone loves to think, what if I got divorced? What if I didn't? What if I took the job? What if I didn't? What if I moved to Europe? What if I didn't? Somewhere out there, there's someone who's living in Europe. And then on the scientific, which I think the scientific is much more interesting, actually. So let's take the scientific. What is it about our world and the research and the science that leads people like you to think this may not be the only universe?
Well, there's a theory called inflation, which is a very powerful theory that says that early on in the history of the universe, right after the Big Bang explosion, there was an incredible stretching of the universe. And that stretching was needed to flatten out the universe and to smooth it out. Because if you look in the sky at night, you look in all directions, you see pretty much the same thing in all directions. You see about the same distribution of stars in, you know, every part of the sky. And that's true for galaxies. That's part true of the temperature of the sky. Everything seems pretty even. So something researchers think must have smoothed out the very early universe. And the Big Bang wasn't enough to do it. If you just had the Big Bang, you would have a very uneven universe. Kind of like if you had cooked something on the stove and part of it was cold, part of it was hot, part of it was burnt, part of it was frozen, something like that. But you need something to kind of, you know, smooth things out, to even out the temperature, to even out the distribution of galaxies. And that idea is called inflation, which is a sudden stretching of the universe from almost a subatomic level up to a very large level in the matter of trillionth of a second. And a lot of people believe in that, and people have come up with theories of that. But the weird thing about it is it's very, very easy to create that theoretically. So it's very easy to say, okay, you put this dot of energy somewhere in the universe, and then all of a sudden you see this rapid stretching. So it's almost like you can just trigger it so easily. That's why people think that there are a whole lot of bubble universes out there that are also triggered at the same time or even later. So that's called eternal inflation. And eternal inflation is one scientific version of the multiverse. And the question is how to prove it. You can't just get in a spaceship and travel to the other universes because they've all stretched, like we've stretched, very, very far away from us. You know, billions and billions and billions of light years away from us. And each light year is trillions of miles. So we're talking about astronomical distances. But it's possible that in the early universe, another universe from this multiverse collided with ours and created a kind of scar in the energy profile of the universe. And scientists have become really good at measuring the temperatures of the empty space. So you just look at one part of the sky and you can measure its temperature really precisely. And that's going to be a really, really cold temperature. But that temperature, if it's found precisely, tells you exactly what happened in that part of space over its history. And what scientists are looking for are evidence of some kind of scar, which would kind of look like a giant ring in space that would represent a collision with another universe.
And do we have that doc with the microwave background? I know there's I've read about like the belly button, that there's an area that's a little colder, that this could be where we broke off from another multiverse.
Well, scientists are very precise, and most scientists don't want to make a claim unless they can prove it statistically. So even if, they're 90% sure, 95% sure, that doesn't cut it in theoretical physics anymore or experimental physics. You have to be, 99.999% sure. So there are areas in the sky that people have claimed and said, well, that looks like it could be a scar from a collision with the other another universe. But then they've tried out the statistics, and the statistics just didn't quite match up, didn't quite show that it was definitely true. So, they're reserving judgment on those parts of the sky.
From a bit of a more cultural standpoint, the kind of things you'd see on The Simpsons or on a television show or a movie, can you discuss the concept that from self-determinism or free will, that for anything to happen, everything must happen? I'm wearing a black t-shirt today. For me to wear a black t-shirt, there are an infinite number of me that are wearing an infinite number of t-shirts.
Well, I was asked by a science magazine some time ago to look at my top 10 multiverse movies. So that's actually out there on the internet, my top 10 multiverse movies. And they all have some really interesting ideas for alternatives. And one of my favorites is this movie from the 90s called Sliding Doors. And in
Gwyneth
Sliding Doors, the main character just, makes a subway train in one version of history, and another version of history, she just misses a subway train. And that affects her entire life because when she just makes a subway train, she goes home and finds out that her boyfriend has been cheating on her with another woman. And she's so upset, she leaves him and she meets someone who seems like Mr. Right, and she gets a better job and she completely improves her life. But when she misses a subway train, I don't want to give too much away, but she gets mugged, and then she goes home and she doesn't see that her boyfriend's cheating, and she's kind of, strung along by this guy, and her life is kind of in static hold for a while. And I'm not going to give away the ending, but there's kind of a twist. So you don't know until the end which of the branches is the best one. And that's kind of true in our lives. If you let's say you're flying somewhere and you're running late to the airport, you're in this taxi or something that's really slow and stuck in traffic. And you miss the plane, you might think like, oh God, I'm so unlucky. But if you just make the plane, you think, oh, that's great. But then you don't know about all the things that could happen. If you arrive at your destination, what if like that means that you lost your luggage didn't go with you, or that something horrible happened to the plane, something like that. So we really don't know which branch of every choice we make is the better one and which is the worst one. So most people tend to be kind of on the optimistic side and say, if I didn't get this job, I'd probably be struggling now or something like that. But you just never know. I like to tell a story about imagine a group of people living in Liverpool in the 1950s, and they're in rock music, and they're just kind of like, this isn't going to make much money. Let's get a job at an accountant firm and like become like public accountants. And then they live their lives as accountants, not to diss accountants, but then they find out if they could somehow see an alternate branch of reality that they
Right.
would have been Beatles if they had gotten together and kept up with the band, but they had kind of chickened out and thought like, oh well, rock music can't really, earn any income.
I remember once, Doc, feeling so smart that I was thinking about how possibility waves take shape when we observe them, and thinking how similar that was to video games. And I thought that I had made that up. I really thought that, I had created something in science and I'll be celebrated. Then I saw a movie called A Glitch in the Matrix, and it's exactly what it's about. And realized, like most things, like solipsism, I thought that was mine too. But how does the multiverse, if it does, relate to simulation theory, both of which we're really interested in here at the DGS?
Well, so there is this interesting idea in science fiction, and some philosophers and scientists say this too, that the universe is a simulation. I don't quite buy it myself, because then I think like, okay, well, why would these aliens simulate a universe which would be incredibly demanding, incredibly challenging to simulate everything we could see? But then, why would they not be a simulation? And it seems a little far-fetched to me. But I did, believe it or not, in preparation for my article about the 10 best movies about the multiverse, I watched The Matrix for the first time, which I'm a little bit embarrassed by. I should have watched it when it came out, but I finally watched it and really enjoyed it. And that's really cool to think, about everything we're doing is a simulation, and that, in reality, we're tied to these, up to these wires, and our energy is being depleted and so forth. So, really cool stuff.
So, Paul, this is a bit of an open-ended question, so take it where you want. But, like, I don't mean specifically, but what's kind of next? Because we've talked a lot here about AI and what quantum computing can mean for that, and what AI can mean for future scientific discoveries. Do you think we're going to learn a lot more about these topics that we're talking about in, say, the next 10, 15 years?
Yeah, well, I want to talk a little bit about the other side of the scientific multiverse, which is the quantum multiverse. And we know everybody believes that quantum physics is incredibly complicated, because you have all these strands of reality that are competing with each other. And you have every time, for example, you take two particles, like two electrons, and they interact with each other, they don't just interact in one way. They might interact 10 different ways, or a whole range of ways simultaneously. Like to say, it's almost like if somebody was commuting, and let's say they're commuting from St. Louis to the suburbs, and they took a bus, they took a train, they bicycled, they walked, and took a taxi. And then you say, hey, wait a minute, you must have done one of those things. Well, if you were an electron, you would do all those things at once. Electrons do like every type of interaction at once. So it's a little weird to think about all these processes going on at once. Now, that's standard quantum physics, and that's the basis of quantum computers. They have all these parallel interactions going on at once. But then there was a fellow in the 1950s, a young man named Hugh Everett, and said, hey, wait a minute, we're made of atoms too. We're made of electrons. We're made of protons. Why not have us be part of the system too? So really, you don't have, separate quantum systems that we observe. And the idea is, in the orthodox quantum physics, you observe a system and then it's said to collapse into one possibility. So it becomes one option or another option. Like, for example, an electron might be both to the left of a detector and the right of a detector, but then once you observe it, it's either to the left or to the right. But Hugh Everett said, hey, wait a minute, why should human beings, which are made of atoms after all, have to influence a quantum experiment? They should be part of the experiment too, which means that humans would bifurcate. So instead of a human being triggering quantum event and telling an electron to be either on the left or on the right, the human consciousness would split up, and one branch would see the electron on the left, and the other branch would see the electron on the right. So they would have a bifurcated reality, and that's called the many worlds hypothesis. And it's an interesting idea. It's a minority view in quantum physics that that instead of things collapsing, things distilling into one possibility or another, that things are always out there as branches, and that we're branching too, which is really weird. Now, the branches aren't dependent on free will, so it's not back to the cultural multiverse where when you make a decision, you're in one branch or another. It's a random quantum event. So every time there's an electron or a particle that interacts or decays or something like that, then humans who are observing it would split into all the different options.
Always so fascinating to talk to Paul. It's Dr. Paul Halpern, H-A-L-P-E-R-N, the author of The Allure of the Multiverse. Check it out. Great book. Easier to read than you would think. Paul has a gift for taking the complex and making it understandable. Paul, thank you again, my friend.
Thank you, Dave. It was great being on your show.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Well, it's been such a love fest in the DGS lately. You knew it had to end. I had a listener hurt my feelings. I don't think he meant to. He offered me condolences on my mom, and then he said that back when the Michael Brown case was happening, that I was one of the only people that was really being rational about it and questioning the media narrative, but he doesn't think he could trust me anymore because of my faux moderate views. And let me push back on that a little bit in a non-emotional way. In my business as a personality, and these guys can vouch for me, and just common sense will back me up, I'm in the absolute worst place to be. Name me a superstar in any media who is moderate. Maybe Michael Smerconish is the most successful, and he has a weekend show on CNN. He's not that big a deal. Rachel Maddow, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, all the people whose names you know are extremists. Being a moderate, being in the middle, being rational, as I would say, is not great for a career like mine. I used to be a devout Christian. I'm now an agnostic. I would be much better served by doing what a lot of people do in my business, and that's pretending to be religious because people like you better. There are many, I would be better off embracing MAGA, which I couldn't do on 97.1. I would be better off if I were to embrace total wokeness, but I can't because I don't believe in either one of those things. I am somewhere in the middle. Every stance I take is because I think that's what is right, and I'm open enough and reasonable and rational enough that if I take in new information and it changes my mind, I will tell you my mind has been changed about something. So there's nothing faux about it. It's as real as can be because it goes against my financial and career interests. That makes sense?
Yes.
Yes, it does.
And wouldn't you agree that that's the truth?
I think your life would be a lot easier if you could just lean into one side or the other.
I'd have a lot more money, and I'd have a lot more people who know my name. Anyway, I don't think the guy was being mean or anything, but I do take umbrage to that. You can say I'm not funny. You can say I'm not smart, or I used to be funnier or smarter, but you can't say that I'm pretending to be what I am, because that would be the dumbest thing you could possibly pretend to be.